When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome, everyone, to Rockin' Nation Podcast. This is a brand new episode of Dive Cuts. We are in season 6. I believe this is episode 4. And we're here to talk about your Missouri Tigers and their basketball program. I am your host, Sam Snelling. With me, as always, except for the last pod, from the plains of Indiana, Matthew J. Harris. Matt Harris, how are you?
I'm fine. I made it back safely. I'm grateful that Watkins stepped in for me while we had a, not like travel issues, just a slight delay while coming back from the West Coast a couple of weeks ago. So thanks to Matt for... The other Matt for stepping in and filling my shoes quite easily. Quite easily.
Well, the good news about Rock'em Nation is if one Matt falls, there's always another Matt there to pick him up.
Parents in the 1980s made sure of that when they named kids.
We have a plethora of Matts, although really probably only two in the basketball side, but I digress. So you're back. Things are back to normal in Indiana. We're gearing up for basketball season. How are you feeling?
Feeling good. Feeling like I would like recruiting to wrap down, so we could begin focusing on preseason stuff. But it's getting exciting. I bought two preseason mags. The Field of 68's the almanac, and I got my usual purchase of the blue book or the blue ribbon book. And so I started digitally scrolling through those today, started putting together the stat outlines for teams. It's hard to believe in about 6 weeks we're gonna have games, but we will, and that's always good.
You earmark all the teams that Blake Lovell was covering, a friend of the podcast, Blake Lovell?
No, I just read through the SEC previews today. Chris Dorr channels most of those, but I will find Blake's stuff at some point. I see Blake's name there. And I make mental notes.
And yeah, so you shared the almanac with me and the other Matt, and I poked around a little bit with that. I have to say, I'm not a huge fan of their SEC rankings.
Yeah, I think they're going to wind up being outliers. For those who are curious, they had Missouri 13th in their preseason poll, but so did Lindy's.
You and I were kind of discussing before the podcast, like one of the things that, like, I feel like it's pretty easy to pick who's going to be at the top, right? Like the top four or five, maybe six teams.
Yeah.
there seems to be a pretty big consensus. You know, like everybody, like Kentucky's going to be good. Shocking.
Tennessee's going to be good.
A lot of people seem to think, yeah, Tennessee's going to be good. Arkansas, they've got a top recruiting class. And
Auburn and Alabama bring back a lot of production, and so does A&M. So it's...
Yeah, you know, so it's really, to me, the challenge of doing preseason rankings is not really kind of where you are at the top. It's where you are at the middle and the bottom. And are you able to sort of look at different rosters and be like, oh, like this is a sneaky good roster. And we were kind of, chatting, and obviously we're going to get into some recruiting, and we're going to get into some SEC previews in later podcasts. You know, but we were kind of, talking about like Georgia. Georgia was absolutely atrocious. In comes Mike White, and he does like a sneaky good job. Like if you're not really paying close attention, a lot of people are probably assuming that, Georgia is just going to get run over again because they've gotten run over pretty much every year that Tom Crean's been there. But Mike White came in, kept like the guys who were able to make a little bit of a difference last year, and brought in some decent pieces. Like I don't expect Georgia to contend for like an NCAA bid, but I certainly think that they have a very very good chance and maybe even likely to not play on Wednesday in the SEC tournament.
They brought in the 19th best transfer class in the country, according to Evan Maya, and bring back about 55% of their returning production. I'm looking at it right now. They bring back offensive value, which is kind of like your catch-all term for everything. They bring back 57% of that. So they don't lose a ton of minutes. They've got, probably three of their top five guys back, and they went out and they found some nice transfers. I think what we said was, is that a team that, you're going to say a sneaky NCAA or tournament or NIT team? No. But is it a 6 or a 7 win roster? Maybe. And if you're Mike White and you're coming in, you need to get some momentum going. Winning 6 or 7 there lets you have enough kind of momentum to sell to some recruits. And Mike, for, as much as grief as we gave Mike for being perpetually 10-8 at Florida, he recruited well. And it looks like he's doing well. He's getting good kids on campus there in Athens, which Athens is a very nice town. And there's, Georgia's got a lot of money for good facilities and good staff. So if Mike can get them to 6 or 7 wins and put together a sneaky good 23 or 24 class, he could get them back to respectability pretty quickly there. But it's...
Well, and he brought in Asa Newells. I don't even know if that's how you say his first name, but
Asa Newells.
Like a 5-star kind of, combo power forward kid. Just brought his brother on as a walk-on. Hey, not a bad idea.
That's a good idea. That's savvy by Mike. That's real savvy. So like we're saying, to me, I'm just gonna say, don't buy Lindy's. Don't buy it. It's the bottom of the rankings make absolutely zero sense. All the rankings make zero sense there, but that's what happens when you I kind of average the polls in a lot of senses. Like I'll find 30 preseason polls and there's going to be two or three where it just leave you absolutely scratching your head. And Lindy's is one of them. I was surprised the Almanac was as low on Missouri as it was. I thought they might put him at like 10th or 11th. I was shocked they had him at 13th.
Just no respect for Isaiah Mosley. We should have Watkins on just to rant about that part.
That he was aggrieved on Isaiah's behalf, deeply wounded on his behalf. But we're going to get around to that. It's you're in pounding away on the keyboard and clacking away and getting SEC previews done. So it's that time of year. It's a special time of year where we begin to think way too deeply about who's going to finish 11th or 12th in the standings. So, but it's a great time of year too.
It is. And the main thing that, especially you, kind of been focusing on, I always keep tabs, but I'm fully engrossed into preseason writing and trying to also keep our football coverage stringing along, is this recruiting stuff, which we have spent time on recently, but I feel like there's been a few twists and turns, and probably the one that everybody is talking about right now is going to be Jordan Butler, who's a four-star post out of South Carolina, had an older brother, played at Florida State. If you remember, Missouri's associate head coach, Charlton C.Y. Young, coached and recruited Butler's older brother. And so very early Missouri, you know, once that staff got assembled, they were talking with Butler, and it looks like Missouri is, or at least Butler is closing in on a decision. I don't want to, you know, place where Mizzou is. So Butler released a final list of three just today. Today is the Tuesday, September 27th. We are recording this just before 9 o'clock at night. And the top three were Auburn, Missouri, and South Carolina. So the home school, your Missouri Tigers, and the Auburn Tigers, which I think a lot of people just believe is a little bit of filler, right, Matt?
Yeah, that's the indication I got from talking to a couple of people, is that it's a nice change.
Makes
it's
the graphic look better.
It's a nice change of pace for Missouri not to be the one that makes the graphic look better. But yeah, hadn't been to Auburn's campus in almost 9 months. I think the surprise here was that Florida State fell out. He was supposed to visit Florida State this weekend. That had been sort of a weird sort of situation. Anyway, he was supposed to go to Florida State in early September, but didn't, because they were refinishing the practice floor and they wanted to supposedly watch a practice. He filled a date on the calendar with a trip to Columbia. And then, you know, as with every visit, Sam, you never hear, man, that visit was a train wreck. There was all good vibes coming out of that visit. And then, like, promptly on Tuesday, the next Tuesday, he, like, said, I'm going to go visit Florida State on October 1st. And, you know, if you're a Missouri fan, that's, you know, that's kind of a buzzkill, because you wanted to hopefully be the last pitch. And now you wound up being that last stop there. I'm surprised, you know, that family, from everything I've heard, you know, really values their connections down there. They, you know, they know everyone throughout that program, and, you know, they have deep respect for Leonard Hamilton. So I thought, you know, that they would get down there for nothing else than to give that staff a shot to do it. But, you know, I heard from somebody else within a day or two that, you know, they're really tired of the process. You know, like a lot of kids, it's been 2 years of just constant, you know, attention. You know, at some point that becomes more of a negative than a positive. So they were just tired of the recruiting process. They wanted to kind of wrap it down. So it sounds like that's what they got to here, was they're going to, you know, rather than take one more trip, you know, to a place where they maybe aren't sold on in this particular recruitment, they're just going to begin to go into decision mode. Butler told On Three that he could have a decision as early as a week. I heard that it could be a couple of weeks, but this thing's moving toward a conclusion, and it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what the ultimate decision is. Because I think South Carolina's done a really, really nice job of getting itself into the mix here, especially because it had a really, really late start.
Yeah, the South Carolina thing to me is a little bit weird, because, like, you know, I've actually written most of my South Carolina preview, and I think a lot of people that, you know, Matt, who have listened to us and you know, read, you know, my stuff in particular, you know that I tend to kind of value a lot of the things that Frank Martin kind of brings to the table. And, you know, I think he's a really, really good basketball coach. And while he never really got South Carolina over the hump, like, he did a good job there. Like, it wasn't a great job. He did a good job. But one of the things that he really struggled with was in-state recruiting.
After Thornwell, after Sindarius.
Yeah, like he was able to get Sindarius Thornwell, and that was sort of like, that was at the time, it sort of felt like the opening salvo, because, like, you know, Martin's reputation kind of coming in was that he was a really good recruiter. You know, he is one of the guys that helped bring, I'm totally going to blank on his name. The two top recruits that were at Kansas State.
Michael Beasley.
Beasley. Who was the other one,
though? I can't remember the other one, but it was a point guard that came with him. But yeah, I think what really changed too was after the FBI investigation, he had to get rid of a staffer who was sort of implicated in that and had been sort of his top in-state recruiter there. I think Chuck Martin, who he brought in from Indiana, had some ties to the state, but they, after 2017, they just fell out of the mix for a lot of guys. And South Carolina is a lot like Missouri in the sense that, like, when it's up, it's up, and when it's down a little bit there. But, you know, it was sort of interesting that they weren't really ever in the mix for G.G. Jackson, you know, before, you know, Frank, you know, left, and, you know, was.
I thought they were in the mix.
They were, but I think there was the question of, you know,
whether he was going to have a job.
Yeah. But the Butlers, I think, were never really seriously pursued.
But even like Zion, I remember, like, Clemson, they were not even in the picture even for Zion.
Clemson was the one that was in the picture for
him. It was Clemson. Like, everybody thought that he was going to go to Clemson before he pledged to Duke.
Yeah, I looked at this a couple of years ago. Like, if it's been top guys since about 2017 out of that state, they really haven't made a dent there. And that's, you know, Lamont Paris has come in and made building a fence, you know, a priority there. I think in some ways the building the fence mentality doesn't quite translate as much as, you know, it does in football. But if you're Paris and, you know, you've got talent in your state, you've got to rope it off, especially given the fact that, you know, Bruce Pearl's done a really nice job of, you know, raiding the Atlanta metro area to the detriment of Tom Crean and Georgia. You know, and can, you know, Greenville, where the Butlers are from, is only like 3 or 4 hours away, I think. So they can reach into there. That's ACC country with Clemson. You know, you've got to do what you can to get talent and keep it, you know, in state and keep it coming to Columbia. Getting Jackson was big. They've had a couple other in state commitments, but Butler was a guy that was a priority for them right out of the chute. Butler's parents are both South Carolina alums. His mom played basketball there. And, you know, they made him a priority from the jump. And, you know, by all indications, you know, he likes the plan for them there. It's different offensively than what, you know, Missouri's pitching him on. But I think it's still the same things that are going to fit what he likes to do, which is kind of playing in some space, playing in, you know, certain perimeter situations where he can kind of play in the slot. He can spot up and he can make decisions off the catch. So there's going to be opportunities for him in both systems. And it'll just be interesting to see what direction he wants to go. I don't think distance is going to phase him, you know, distance from home. But if there's a good situation and it happens to be in your home state, why not stick around and see what you can do there? Knows a lot of the guys that are committing there, knows GG pretty well. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what holds weight. There's sort of that opportunity to, you know, do a revamp, you know, effort, you know, close to home. But, you know, CY has known that family for a long, long time. You know, even Dennis does well. You know, Dickie Nutt, you know, knows them a little bit as well. So it'll be interesting to see which relationships win out here and sort of what setup wins out, you know, over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting. And, like, I think about, you know, recruiting and, you know, an in-state recruiting. You know, especially as basketball and you know, prep basketball sort of has completely moved away from, you know, the more kind of traditional, you know, high schools. There's so many more prep schools and basketball factories that are popping up. And
grassroots aren't just your metro area anymore. It's, you know, surrounding states now. It's become far more regional and dispersed, you know.
Yeah, like it's spread out. You know, guys are. And instead of finishing out your high school and, you know, same guys that you grew up with, you go and you play with a prep school and you do online courses to kind of finish at high school. And that's even happening for, like, guys that are going to, like, the Horizon League. Like, it's just, it's completely changed the way that we look at, you know, how you can seal up the borders of your state. And even to a degree where it's like, it, you know, as many know, I'm a St. Louisan, and like I feel like the shift away from a lot of public schools and towards private schools, like it's completely different than what it was. And not that private schools ever had a problem attracting, you know, good players, but you know, if it really does feel like CBC and Chaminade,
those programs are taking hits now. Like Chaminade got raided by Link Academy.
Oh yeah, that is true. So like they're feeling that bleed, and so they'll bleed away from, you know, like, you know, Parkway South, or as we get into like regional,
yeah,
you know, St. Louisisms here. But you know, it is just like one of those things where like you are looking to treat your recruiting in a way that is more regional. And so for like, it makes sense for Frank Martin maybe to focus on like the guys he feels like he can recruit. And like, that's an important thing, is to know who you can recruit. And so like, you know, Lamont Paris coming in and having this pitch of saying, okay, well, the previous staff didn't prioritize you guys. And it's like, well, maybe the previous staff didn't prioritize them, you know, because like, they learned a lot of hard lessons. And so you want to go out and get guys who you think you can recruit and compete with. But that being said, like, you know, the Butlers being alums, like you should be able to attract. And like Aiden Shaw is a good example of that. Like one of the things that Mizzou had working for it from the start is Aiden Shaw's parents were both Mizzou alums. You know, they're not far from campus. They are on the KCK side of Kansas City. So, like, you know, they're smelling that foul air in Kansas. You know, but they are grads. And so, like, that plays a role. If you have, you know, Jonathan Butler and the brother. What was the brother's name?
It was John Butler. And if you've got, you know, John Butler, who played at Florida State, you know, the way I would look at it is this. Way back in the day, an LSU assistant told me what you need to consider in any recruitment is win. What's important right now? What's important to that kid, that particular situation? What relationships matter? You know, what factors are going to influence that kid? And, you know, the way it was conveyed to me was, you know, the Butler's going to look at every situation kind of holistically. They're going to look at everything involved there. But relationships also matter. So I think Paris could make a great pitch and can make a rational pitch, but they've seen what, you know, CY, you know, had in place for John Butler Jr., you know, who went to the pros after 1 year. I think he signed a free agent deal after his freshman year and going to the draft this year. But they've seen what that plan looks like. They kind of know what that plan looks like. You know, they've got that trust and that connection with CY. And, you know, as much as, you know, Lamont may come in and have closed ground, you know, are you ready to invest trust there? And, you know, being at home is a nice perk on top of that. So I think that's always the thing to keep in mind is, you know, what's important in each situation to each kid and what those relationships are, and, you know, how it's going to, you know, how that will play out and how that sort of balances. Because I think what we do is we look at it and we say, well, they're alums and there's that affinity and there's that connection. Whereas I think, you know, it sounds like the family's sort of evaluating everything, and that's just one piece of the puzzle. It's not an overriding thing. So that's always the hard part there. I think if, you know, we always sort of, I think, evaluate through a fan's eyes as to how we think it should go. And I think for a lot of kids, the variables are very different than what we assume they might be. So,
well, realistically, like that's kind of like how people should approach your decision to attend whatever college. You know, like proximity and in-state and affordability, like for a regular college student, are certainly things that you factor in. You know, but if that isn't a concern and you don't mind necessarily being that far away, then like I think one of the things, if you read the On3 article where they're you know, they were talking to him and asking him, you know, what he sort of liked about each school. Like, the number of times he mentioned in a really short paragraph about, you know, professional opportunities in the NBA was a lot.
Yeah.
And I think, like, that's when you're, you know, when you're kind of getting a key into Missouri's pitch is, you know, like, and it kind of extends back to, like, what Dennis Gates was talking about in his introductory press conference is, like, we want to be there on draft night. Like, we want to be at the table when that kid gets drafted, and we want to, you know, give him a hug. And, like, that's a Mizzou kid going in the first round of the draft. That's a Mizzou kid going in the, you know, the draft lottery. You know, and being able to develop those guys. You know, it's one thing for, you know, like Michael Porter Jr., who was always going to be a first round draft pick. Even with his back injury, he was still a lottery pick. You know, to show up on draft night and get picked in the lottery. But it's a whole nother thing to take a guy who, like, you know, with Jordan Butler, who's right now kind of on the lower end of the four stars, to take a kid like that, to turn him into a pro, you know, like that to me is where you can really start, you know, hitting some home runs when you're talking about recruiting. And I think Florida State had kind of built that level of respect up when it came to recruiting.
Yeah, and that's the one thing that Anthony Robinson, Trent Pierce Bowl said. They, you know, both of them said, you know, they love the relationships they have with the assistants and the usual stuff you hear. They said they both, when they sat across from Dennis, they said they couldn't quite, you know, describe it, but they felt like when he was describing what the plan was going to be, where he was going to take them, they just felt like, yeah, this is real. This feels more real than maybe what I've heard from some other places. And I think that that's sort of an ineffable quality. That's a confidence thing. That's a charisma thing. And that's a, you know, command of what you want to do, you know, from the head coach. But I think that that's going to be interesting to see how that translates. And if that's the thing that puts them over the top with Butler, but his recruitment is one to monitor. But I think it's his recruitment sort of, I think we were talking about this before we started. It kind of puts a lot of the other context around some of the other events that we've seen over the last month. Because I think when we came into August, we thought, you know, Butler might be one of those guys that was kind of drifting away and out of the picture. And now 3 weeks later, it seems like he's the guy that they're, you know, focused on, and they feel confident that they're going to be able to, that they've closed, and at the end of the day, they're going to get him. So it's sort of another testament to how the board is never really set, and it always fluctuates and kind of mutates. But one of those was yesterday when McCaleb Rich committed to Kansas State. He had Missouri among his final four. He took a visit in late August, then went to Ole Miss, Kansas State, and then UIC a couple of weeks ago for his last official visit. And right around the time, you know, he was getting ready to gear up for the trip to Chicago, you know, it started filtering around that, yeah, it looks like this thing has kind of narrowed down to Kansas State and Ole Miss. And at the end of the day, you know, I think Ole Miss tried to get in yesterday to make one final push, but Jerome Tang's crew wins it. But I think that makes sense when you look at the timing of when the Butler, you know, visit was announced, was around the same time that you started hearing kind of whispers that maybe Rich was looking elsewhere. And, you know, I think Watkins heard from somebody that was pretty reliable for him that, you know, things had started to shift a little bit and Missouri was kind of drifting there. So, you know, the question is, you know, that I don't think we've been able to confirm, this is purely speculative on our part and reading tea leaves, but, you know, was there an effort to decelerate one recruitment to accelerate another one? I think that's sort of interesting to consider in all this as well, because they also brought in Dennis Parker reportedly last weekend, although we haven't seen any evidence that he physically made it to Columbia. Supposedly Dennis Parker, another top 100 kid, a top 90 prospect out of Richmond, Virginia, kind of the same position as McCaleb Rich, but a little bit bigger, a little bit longer, more of a physical match to what, you know, this Missouri staff kind of values in prospects, that he was taking a visit. So if Jordan Butler's coming in for a visit, And then the next week you're bringing in a guy who's at the same position as Mikayla Bridge, who had also been talking about how Missouri had ramped up its recruitment. He said those comments back in early September. You know, was it Missouri adjusting to the fact that they thought they were drifting out of the picture for Rich? Did they de-emphasize it? It's just been interesting to see kind of how the last couple of weeks, how the board has really shifted and kind of shaped up as we get to the end of the 23 cycle.
But yeah, so if you like traipse back to like a month ago, like, and you just look at Missouri and its class as it existed, just the two guys who've been on since early July, with Robinson and Pierce. The one thing like that Missouri and really the like the current roster needs is somebody with some size and a big. You know, Mikayla Bridge, for all the like the physical attributes that we like, and his sort of projectability and the things that you think he can be at the collegiate level.
He's not a five.
He's not a five. He's as much of a five as maybe Kobe Brown will
is a point
probably
guard.
Play some five. like he'll probably play some five, you know, but it's the if he's running the five, then you are probably having some rebounding issues, despite, you know, his strength and athleticism. Like, yeah, that's just not what you want. You want him more at that 3-4 hybrid spot.
And that's where coaches have been projecting him to, is more of a wing than a four in college. I mean, that was sort of the thing when I talked to Mark Chambers a couple of weeks ago, the St. Louis coach. It was, you know, they played him at the four because they needed him at the four last year in East St. Louis. But the development plan, you know, with him and with, you know, the Jets, his grassroots team, was they wanted to move him more towards the three, and it was improving his ball handling, improving his ability to make plays off the bounce. And that was something, you know, he can slide to fours defensively in a switch, but the thought was that he was going to move more towards the wing once he got to college. So if you projected him as a three, then, you know, Missouri was looking at, you know, guys that were all going to be in the backcourt. They weren't going to have a big. So Butler, to me, if they had really drifted out of the picture there, I think it would have been interesting because they would have had no fives left on the board in the fall if Butler had really drifted out to Steve on them. So it certainly would have been interesting if things had gone differently.
Well, I think like that's kind of like when it comes to projectability, like, you know, what's funny is I really kind of feel, and maybe this is kind of sidetracking the conversation a bit, but I really kind of feel like a lot of grassroots and high school coaches are always talking about like projecting, you know, players up a position, when in reality we're always kind of projecting guys down a position. So like, you know, Trent Pierce is a good example of a guy who really kind of works as a more of a traditional three. But in college, like, he should be playing the four with his size, his versatility, and playing the four. Like, you're not playing on the block. Like, and that's the same thing with Butler. Like, Butler, if Butler hits campus, he's going to play a lot at the five. And, but, you know, like, guys like him and his grassroots coaches, they all want him playing like the four, because like there's this I don't know, this.
He played
weird,
five.
Outdated opinion of like what a five is, and like
he played a five.
Modiar should be playing the five. Like he like these big tall guys. It doesn't mean you're sitting your ass on the block. It just means that you're like that. You're defending the other team's like tall player.
You're the backside of the. You're the back anchor of the rim. You're the low side. You're the low man in help. You rotate to protect the rim, but with the way offenses work now, you're going to play in the perimeter because you're going to get attacked in switches and in ball screens. Like you're going to play out a little bit there. And, you know, Butler will play at the five. You know, he played the five for his grassroots team. He played the four earlier in high school because his brother was playing the five. So they wanted to put,
yeah,
but he played the five at, you know, Christchurch Episcopal School. So he's played the five and he can post. He's not a bully post. He's more of a footwork face up guy, you know, attack you with skill, but he can play on the block. But he's also a guy that if you put him in the slot and in certain situations, he knows how to handle a little bit. He can pull up a little bit. you know, he's not going to blow by or explode by guys, but he's got the ability and the comfort handling the ball to operate in space a little bit. And he makes good reads, you know, off stationary situations. He can hit cutters. So he's going to play out on the perimeter in college. I don't think there's any doubt that he's going to not be wedded to the block. It's a question of who he's going to guard, and he's going to guard fives. But he's and there's no shame in that. There's absolutely no shame in that. The question,
all I have to say to like anybody who has any shame, like they want to feel shame about it, is like Draymond Green plays the five. How tall do you think Draymond Green is?
Probably 6'7", 6'8".
Like Charles Barkley played the four for 20 years in the NBA, and that dude is 6'3.5". Like it's so much like the, if you're good, the game will find a way to fit you in. And to me, like what I like about Butler is his level of skill for as big as he is. So yeah, I don't really envision that he's going to be, you know, a smash mouth bully ball, old school post, you know, center who's just going to throw him the ball with his back to the basket. Like that's just not going to happen. That's not how Missouri wants to play. That's not
how anybody's playing.
You know, how Butler wants to play. Like, you know, he's going to be out and he's going to be setting ball screens. He's going to probably do a fair amount of picking and popping, and that's going to prepare him for the NBA. And I do think that, you know, kind of getting back to our discussion, you know, I do think that either South Carolina and Missouri probably have a fair plan to utilize what he's good at to make sure that he's getting professional looks. Yeah.
The Rich piece here, I think he could have worked for Missouri in the sense that he does anything he's asked. He really does. You know, he's done different things every year of high school. His skill level is coming along, and credit to that kid. You know, he's not coming to Missouri, but that kid deserves all the praise in the world. That kid didn't have high majors really looking at him. You know, he was a bouncy kid who was, you know, an undersized 4 or 5 when grassroots started, and he had MAC schools and OVZ schools looking at him. By June, he had Kansas State, Missouri, Ole Miss coming after him. That kid put in the work. He you know, did what he had to do when the time came, and he's going to go to a program in, you know, I think Jerome Tang's the right coach for him because they figure out how to use guys like him in Waco when he was at Baylor and on Scott Drew's staff. I think he's going to figure it out there. I wouldn't have been upset if he came to Columbia because I think he's got the right mentality and the right physicality, even if he's not quite the right sort of like height and, you know, wingspan maybe that you would see from guys that Dennis and CY have recruited before. But that kid plays his ass off. He does what he's told. He's athletic. He's tough. He would have found a way to fill a role on this roster, but the roster needs a five.
I think the roster needed a five. He would have been really good at any of the three high majors that were on his final list, like K-State, Missouri, or Ole Miss. I think he's the kind of guy that you really kind of need at programs like that. A guy who can,
who's positionally malleable, do different things, who can cut, who's going to board, who can switch defensively. He's just going to find a way to be on the
Who's fine playing like 12, 15 minutes a game and, you know, and scrapping and getting putbacks and stuff like that.
Yeah. But the one thing that'll be interesting to see is the Dennis Parker recruitment. You know, how much traction is there there?
Did he make it to Columbia?
Did he even make it west?
Like he said, like in the middle of last week, he was going to Mizzou for the weekend.
I saw no,
and we don't know that it happened.
But I watched some tape of him, bigger version of Rich. The one thing I'll say is the handle's a little bit more advantaged. The finish, it, you know, polished up. The finishing craft around the rim is a little bit more polished. The shooting mechanics look pretty good. You know, he's better off the pull up inside 15 feet. But once he begins to stretch, the shot flattens a little bit and it kind of comes up short. But you know, that's, you know, nothing that can't be fixed with time in the gym and on the gun and with a good, you know, staff working with you to kind of help translate your shooting stroke a little bit. But he's not as much of an on-ball guy, but he's a really, really good off-ball defender. People I know love watching and really taking note of when guys rotate on time and rotate to the right gaps or understand when to cr- when to X out and when to just to close out straight. Like, the guy is fantastic off the ball, plays well within a team scheme, really good still rotating down and rotating over. Probably not as much like raw explosion, but he gets off the ground. He's got good length. He can rim protect, agile enough, and kind of has enough, you know, kind of, you know, flexibility and agility to kind of play in ball screen situations. So really, really interesting. He's going to be a guy that you would take and you would hopefully develop over a couple of years and, you know, kind of flesh out his offensive game. But he could come in right away, you know, understand how to cut, understand how to play team defense. 6'6", 6'7", 180. Looks like a plus two or three wingspan. Ticks a lot of the boxes for the staff, but had been considered an NC State kind of like lean for a while. Went to NC State, you know, in early September. That was seen as their chance to close him. They didn't, and then he was taking a visit to Missouri. So is he just using the visits? And if he is, good for you, man. You only get five of them. Take those. It's free trips. I wouldn't say no. But, or is this a situation where, as we saw with Trent Pierce, where Missouri kind of sneaks in and then it rapidly accelerates and suddenly it's gone from, oh, you're just listening, to I want to commit? We don't know where it is, but Parker fits a lot of what the staff likes and what they value in prospects. It's just a question of how serious and how viable his recruitment is at this point.
Yeah, that's one of those things, like, we're just going to have to wait and see if the visit actually happened, you know, where Missouri's in the picture. It does seem to me like, so, you know, we've talked a lot about Chris Parker. We felt really good that Missouri was going to land Chris Parker, but that decelerated fast because, one, and I believe you and I said this on a previous pod, let's wait until he gets onto campus. Parker has still not made it to campus. And until he does, like, Missouri is either really trying to slow play him, or they're just happily going to let him go someplace else. And he was just on campus at UCF, picked up a UCF offer. So there is some possibility that, you know, a guy that you and I both sort of like as a prospect, but definitely one who's slid down the rankings a little bit. Like, he's fallen off, and so maybe Missouri has moved on. Excuse me.
Yeah, but see, I was down there visiting them when they were doing the rounds last week. So
just popped in randomly. Okay.
Yep. Yeah. So, you know, I think it, you know, I said before we came on, they know they have three spots they've got to fill because they have three guys that are leaving. And they need a big. So just, is it a question where they've let Parker slide, or they've kind of said, hey, you know, we're going to be interested. We'll get you to campus when we can. And, you know, they're just all in on trying to get this Butler thing sewn up. But if it were me and I knew I, you know, had three or four slots open, I would take him just because you need to upgrade the overall talent of the roster. And, you know, I don't know if he's more of a combo or more of a wing, but he's 6'7". Long, rangy, really good getting into gaps, you know, turns over the gears really well in the open floor, you know, shot selection's got to get better, got to clean that up, but there's a high ceiling there. If you can get him in the gym, you can get him focused and get him sort of going the right direction, but we'll see. I had heard that it may not be until like November that he may try and get here, which that's around signing day. So,
yeah, that's waiting until the last minute and seeing if you can postpone a guy you think you've already got in the bag until the last minute and see if you can maybe upgrade in the meantime.
But
John Bull made it to campus.
Gotta get John Bull. That guy is just toolsy as all get out. And I know the offense needs to happen at some point, but that guy's just fun to watch defensively. Just competes.
He could probably erase as much of the opponent's offense as he could, you know, create on his own.
He's only been playing basketball for like 2 or 3 years. Walked on, played up a level on the EYBL with MOCAN, which is won the EYBL basically 3 times in the last 6 years. Played 50% minutes. And had a block rate of 10.5. just swatted shit. Defensive rebound,
a lot of blocks.
Just rebound rate of 23% on the defensive end. I know he's not, you know, he hasn't fleshed out his footwork in the post. I know he's got to get better offensively, but you put the kid on the floor and he rebounds his ass off and he erases shots. And if you put him in rim run situations, if you hit him as a guy on lobs, whether it's rolling or in the short corner on dump offs, he can give you 6 to 8 points off low usage, high efficiency touches. The guy averaged 1.4 points per possession. When he gets the ball in his hands, it's usually in an advantageous spot, and he does what he's supposed to do with it. So, definitely a developmental guy, you know, as close to an in-state kid as you're going to get, you know, with his, you know, guardian Marcus Wilson, you know, being from St. Louis, but Marcus is now on staff at Evansville, but
so he's not from St. Louis. He was in St. Louis. Yeah. Wilson was on staff under Rick Majerus, I think.
Yeah.
And when that staff turned over, he stayed on in St. Louis. I think he was like a regional YMCA director for a couple of years, yep, and like helping out with some grassroots programs.
Yeah.
But has since accepted a position at the University of Evansville, where he is an alumna there in Evansville. And he was quite a good college player.
Yeah, I think
people
he's,
don't know.
Yeah, I think. And David Ragland, who was a Butler assistant for a while, got that job and brought him over to Evansville. So it'll be interesting to see kind of where John ends up. He's taken an OV, another visit to Michigan. I think he took some unofficials to Butler and to Notre Dame, but big to get him on campus right now, especially, you know, given that, you know, Marcus and Zoe were close, you know, and the question was, you know, what would happen if a new staff came in? They prioritized him. They got him on campus as a junior. That's huge. And again, you know, I feel like we talk about measurables more with this staff than we did with the last one. John Bull is, man, if that kid's not a Florida State type kid, I don't know what is. Like, I'm surprised Leonard Hamilton hasn't sold out to try and get that kid. He fits it. Like, that's...
Hey, maybe he has. We just haven't seen it.
But big to get John Bull on campus. That's a guy that, you know, I personally think him and Marcus Allen are probably my two guys that I would have atop the board in the 24 class. I think both of those are guys that, you know, fit what this program wants to do and kind of the profile there, but we'll see. But happy that John made it here. a lot of guys wearing number 11 in photo shoots. They're going to have to sort that out. Only one guy can wear it when they actually get here. Only one guy gets to wear number 11. But
yeah, I always kind of find that funny. Like, they, you know, especially I think you had kind of pointed out that somebody was wearing like Amari Davis's uniform, and you're like, could somebody not take the last name off the uniform? Like, I don't understand. Like, what are we doing here? We can't have just like a generic uniform these guys can put on.
Is the Nike deal that cheap that we can't just get fashion outfits for photo shoots? But yeah,
we clearly need to up the winning in the program to get like on the high end of like the Nike turnover, also get rid of those hideous flames, as Watkins calls them, on the uniforms.
The only other recruit
on the shorts.
The only other recruiting notes is that they've got another kind of packed weekend coming up. James Brown, a top 50 kid in 24, a post out of Chicago, is slated to visit this weekend.
I feel good about that, Matt.
That is he's very good. Played,
you know that I would now.
I know. I'm just gonna keep going here and just not even acknowledge this.
I feel good.
That sounded like you were 13 again, and I don't ever want to be exposed to that.
I just like if Levi could like you know, have a little James Brown in the background while we go back and forth on this, like, this would be great.
That's
great podcasting.
I mean, I don't think we can pay the rights fee to use that song in the pod. We don't have that in the budget.
Hey, you can if it's less than 30 seconds.
Up in the dirt. Up in the dirt.
fair use.
Just let me say that Dallas Thomas is coming to campus, and he's very good. He's very Dallas Thomas is coming. That's a another kid that, you know, is looking like a top. He slid in the rankings a little bit, but that's a top 60 level kid. And then a guy that's kind of flown under the radar but took a Tennessee visit, Jordan McCollum, another long, lean, kind of 3-4 type out of out of Harriman, Tennessee, which I think is around Nashville. He's coming in this weekend. So three 2024 visitors slated to be on deck for Friday night.
And Samuel Mpemba, for those that follow Mizzou football recruiting, he tweeted that he's coming. After all this like hubbub about Luther Burden, you know, leaving cryptic Instagram posts or something, like, people need to chill out.
But Sam Mpemba's coming, but where you need to be going on Friday night is to the Quad for the basketball tip-off event. This sounds fun. It sounds creative. I support both those things. If it doesn't go perfectly, that's also fine. But go watch people and watch Aiden Shaw try and dunk around the Quad, because that's fun, and you should laugh at the absurdity of things like that. So go out for
I would 100% think it's worth to just to go see how athletic Aiden Shaw is.
If like, you haven't seen it live, it's worth it.
It is really like one of those things, like when you, it's easy to be impressed on video, but when you actually see it in person,
it's easy bounce.
It's hard to believe that another human can do those things.
And when I say easy bounce, I mean it looks like he's barely lifting his heels when he gets into liftoff. He gets up easily. Go watch it. It's fun, and you know, it'll make for a great atmosphere. You should want more of that around the basketball program. And just in general, I don't know how long they're going to want to keep the kids on the field for Georgia, Missouri on Saturday night. Hopefully they just watch a little bit of that and they go eat dinner somewhere and just let the rest of the football game play out. But three big recruits coming to town this weekend. And again, it's big to get someone like Dallas Thomas on campus. That guy's going to be a priority for Arkansas. James Brown is going to be a priority for the likes of Michigan State and Illinois. You know, and Jordan McCollum's an underrated kid. I think he's going to move up in the rankings, you know, as time moves forward, as, you know, the months move ahead and you know, he gets out on 17U next year. So this is a good group. It's a win to get these guys on campus this early. If you care that about this staff, you know, making inroads, this is the type of stuff you want to see. It doesn't guarantee they're going to get anybody, but you know, if you want to feel like the one thing you can do is contribute to an atmosphere, just go watch basketball. Just go do that. That's fun. I would do it. So that's my polite encouragement.
With Dallas Thomas, if there's any chance you can, you know, give Eric Musselman a swift, you know, kick between the legs with some in-state Arkansas recruiting, more power to you.
It's fun. That's the fun. I don't know if there. I would love it if basketball recruiting became the flashpoint of that rivalry, because, you know, they managed to pluck Trevin Brazil off the roster here. If Missouri were to return the favor and go get Dallas Thomas, that would equally be great. And plus, Dickie Nutt, you know, drove around the Little Rock metro area, got off 6:30 a couple of times at Central Park View and at Little Rock Christian to see four recruits down there last weekend. So if Missouri and Arkansas want to start going at it over basketball recruits, I'm all good with that. That'd be a fun little wrinkle for the new regime. So
we're going to wrap this up because we are, I think we've actually gone well past what we expected. So with everything behind us now, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks to kind of, I guess, hopefully know where Jordan Butler is going to college. I will say thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Make sure that you are blah, 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 subscribed to this podcast feed. Wherever you download and listen to your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts or the Google Play Store, you can get us on Spotify. I don't know, man. I feel like before the box score has kind of been like killing a little bit. Nate and BK had on Parker this past weekend. They've been doing a fair amount of good discussion on some crappy things going on with Mizzou. So it's always good to listen to. Make sure that you check that out. Head over to the flagship, rockemnation.com. You can always follow Matt on Twitter, at MattKHarris85. You can follow me, at Sam P. Snelling. If you are into recruiting, definitely follow Matt. He's doing his thing there. And then we'll be back in a couple weeks. And maybe, I don't know, we'll have a guest. We'll see. Until then, thank you.